Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Dr. Synonymous coming to you from Dr. Synonymous International Headquarters in Spring Valley, Ohio, where it's dark already, but it's like 9:14. We're starting just a little bit late because we had a function at church tonight. And then, would you believe it, I stopped to make my coffee. The coffee tonight is 24/7, which I buy in a whole bag, a one-pound bag, from the Bellhop Cafe in downtown Bellbrook. It's hot, it's good, and tonight I'm drinking it from a Café du Monde cup that I got in Nolens, Louisiana, at the Café du Monde, original French market coffee stand. Coffee and beignets, sort of world-renowned, the original French market coffee stand, serving café au lait and hot beignets, or French donuts, 24 hours a day, year-round. It's been in the French Quarter since 1862, and that is a while. So tonight we're going to say a little bit about arthritis and the Dr. Synonymous blog, and we'll float through Twitter probably. I thought I launched my chat. There we go. The chat room is launched. That takes like a little while. And then we promote on Twitter and Facebook. Send. So the Blog Talk Radio is really nice. They have the studio built in that you can access via your account and broadcast. And then you slowly but surely start to upgrade and get a little better communication strategies. And finally, you get like a real awesome microphone like Dr. Mike Sevilla has. And you get a lot clearer sound. My sound isn't the clearest. And maybe the voice isn't either. So we have primary care practice, advances in chronic osteoarthritis management, that I got in the mail from Vindico Medical Education in Thoroughfare, New Jersey. And this is good for continuing medical education. One AMA PRA credit. And the faculty on here, I know one, AJ C.N. Placco, who's a family doctor. Well, what are they saying here? So there's one little article, intra-articular injection therapy for osteoarthritis of the knee, and another one about knee joint injection. Started on the front cover, continued later. And first tonight, we have to give our disclaimer. So remember, we are not practicing medicine on you tonight. So don't construe anything I say as telling you what to do medically for any condition or disease that you have. That's best done in the context of a personal relationship with your own family doctor. Okay, that said, we'll look at Andrew W. Gottschalk's MD article about intra-articular injection. The workhorse of injection therapy is corticosteroids, which were first used systemically in the late 1940s and were viewed at that time as something of a miracle cure for osteoarthritis. Before long, however, physicians came to understand that systemic use of these agents, especially over long periods, had significant side effects. So then they began injecting steroids locally to try to keep from having reaction through the whole body. And that was as early as 1951. Several different injections are available, and he mentions those here. And he talks about people who fail conservative therapy, like with NSAIDs and rest, and then injections of corticosteroids, could be exposed to the next kind of injections. So you're kind of looking down. There was a systematic review in 2006, notable for the relative lack of side effects encountered with corticosteroid injection into the knee. Furthermore, one of the few studies assessing long-term use was notable for the paucity of adverse effects encountered. So they're saying that for steroid injections are very safe. Infection is extremely rare, occurring in 1 of 17,000 to 1 of 162,000 joint and soft tissue injections. Even though infection is super rare, we're reminded to use aseptic techniques when we're injecting a knee. A fluid within the joint is an ultrafiltrate of plasma, supplemented with hyaluronan, a large linear macromolecule produced by cells lining the joint capsule. So there's some other things about visco supplements. So visco supplement, which is hyaluronan and its derivatives injection, should be considered in patients who have failed corticosteroid injection but who do not desire or would not tolerate surgical intervention. So visco supplementation should also be considered in patients who have a contraindication to corticosteroid injection, like uncontrolled diabetes. So the visco supplements, they talk about some studies. Safety, they appear to be quite safe, and even a large meta-analysis of 76 studies involving these injections noted that no major safety issues were detected. Now remember, nothing is perfect, and every chemical that we use in medicine has adversely affected somebody. So they have a little chart here of visco supplements. Synvisc, Hyalgan, Suparts, Gel 1, and Euflexa. The first one is, and then there's Orthovisc. I'm sorry, I missed that one at the top there. Orthovisc and Synvisc. So now I'm a person with arthritis in my right knee. I take NSAIDs every day and some other, like Boswellia, glucosamine, SAME, fish oil, and turmeric to try to buy some time for the knee, which is not doing so well as far as prognosis for ultimate replacement. But the next strategy on my knee is this visco supplement injection. So it's nice to hear they're quite safe. And there's a novel one after they talk about the visco supplements. Quite safe, and even a large meta-analysis, 76 general. In general, these injections should be avoided in patients with known hypersensitivity to sodium hyaluronate preparations. And never shoot the drug through an infection or into a knee that has an infection around it. And And some of the visco supplements are derived from avian sources, that would be chickens, and they should be avoided in patients with allergies to eggs or feathers. So that would be Synvisc. So Synvisc comes from an avian source, and it injections per treatment would be 3 for Synvisc. And then there's an upgraded product called Synvisc-1, which would be 1 injection per treatment. The Orthovisc would be 3 or 4 injections. The reported duration of pain relief with Orthovisc was 22 months. Synvisc was 6 months. Hyalgan was 6 months. Suparts was 6 months. Euflexa was 6 months. And Gel 1 was 13 weeks. Aha. So here's a little thing about approaches to knee joint injection. You got the infrapatellar injection. There's like a big spot to do that. Anterolateral or anteromedial. There's a lateral midpatellar injection site. They have nice photos in this positioning the needle and doing the injection. So there's another article on arthritis, optimizing the non-surgical treatment, basically of shoulder arthritis, glenohumeral arthritis. So with severe arthritis and bone-on-bone apposition in a 70-some-year-old person, they did the intra-articular injections. They talked about orovisco supplementation first, as well as topical NSAIDs and lidocaine patches, which may be of some benefit. Chondroitin and glucosamine are both over-the-counter, and they're mild anti-inflammatories. And they inhibit degenerative enzymes. And they talk about intra-articular injection also. And that's sort of the same kind of thing. Then there's key findings in the Johnston County Osteoarthritis Project. Okay, anyway, you heard it here. Arthritis joint injections. So we're going to pop over here to Blogger. Coffee is even better now, 5 minutes later. So I downloaded Adblocker onto Google, which is, shareware. So you send money to the author of it if you like it, and somehow now it's not on my system. There it is. It showed back up. Okay, so it disappeared for a second, came back up. It's kind of fun to just poof, wipe out these annoying ads. So we're waiting for a screen change here. That's happening slowly. So So go back over here to Twitter. Twitter.com, see who's having the most fun on Twitter. We're a little slow tonight. Tuesday night, a lot must be happening out there. Now we have CHSOCM chat. And then there's something about Death Cafe that we mentioned before on the show. I'm looking at this book I mentioned last week, A Call to Heal, Reflections on a Life in Family Medicine by Ian R. McQuinney. Chapter 9, Diagnosing and Healing. It would be difficult to exaggerate the importance of the initial presentation of illness. The doctor's response profoundly influences how events unfold. Misdiagnosis of an acute, curable condition may result in disability or death. Diagnosis of a spurious disease may set the stage for prolonged invalidism. When 10 independent tests are done in healthy people, there is a 40% chance that one will be statistically abnormal and liable to be misinterpreted as evidence of disease. Over-investigation and under-investigation are both potential pitfalls, but family medicine has a good record in the judicious use of tests. So we don't order a bunch of extra unnecessary tests because, folks, we have a relationship with the patient over time and we can chart a good path to their diagnosis and treatment plan, which does consider false positives, false negatives, and cost. Dr. McQuinney goes on to say, in the process of diagnosis, physicians interpret the raw data presented by the patient, add the data acquired by their own search, and try to fit the illness into a disease category within their frame of reference. In this way, many patients presenting to family physicians have their raw illness differentiated into well-known disease categories. On the other hand, and this is important in family medicine, many patients have illnesses that defy this kind of differentiation. When I joined my father's practice in 1955, this is Dr. McQuinney, I was surprised by the number of patients with vague complaints. I say complaints because technically they were not symptoms. A common opening was, I think I need a tonic. The symptoms, when they came, were expressed in metaphysical terms such as, I'm tired all the time. I'm not myself, I'm down, or I don't know what's wrong with me. These terms, says Oliver Sacks in a quote from 1973, neither require nor admit definition. They are understood at once, but defy explanation. They are at once exact, intuitive, mysterious, irreducible, and indefinable. Fatigue is reported as the most common presenting complaint to primary care physicians. In my experience, another common presentation is lowered stress tolerance. This presents as fatigue, anxiety, depression, relationship problems, and predisposition to physical complaints, particularly repeated illnesses like respiratory infections or urinary tract infections. Estimates of how much illness in family practice remains undifferentiated even after assessment vary from 25 to 50%. When patients present their problems, they often do so in a fragmented and oblique manner. There is seldom the neat history of present illness which the conventional clinical method asks us to take. Several problems are often presented at one visit, and the most important one for the patient may not be presented first. A patient who presents with a feeling of having a lump in the throat, suggesting globus hystericus, will probably not say that he is afraid it is cancer, but will agree if asked. And that's what I call a withholding violation, folks. But people under stress and duress will communicate differently than their usual self. To reassure this patient, the doctor has to do a credible examination, check the smoking history, and consider whether the patient trusts him enough to accept his reassurance. A patient's deepest hurts, until then unspeakable, may only be revealed when there is complete trust. Even then, they may only be expressed when the patient is leaving, or as an aside, while I'm here anyway. If there is shame or fear of rejection, problems may be expressed in indirect rather than direct language. How illnesses are presented is often recognizably idiosyncratic to a doctor who knows the patient. Okay, so that's a section from Dr. McQuinney's book, A Call to Heal, Reflections on a Life in Family Medicine. And he had a very good one. So let's go back over to Blogger and look at the posts of the people I follow. There's a lot from Make, M-A-K-E, for do-it-yourselfers. Let's go up here and find another one. How about let's see if we have anything on healthcare, etc. I'm clicking. My computer is saying no, JavaScript void. And the next one is void also. So it could be when I erased the ads that I didn't want, that I might have kind of wiped out some language, computer language. So I may have to go back and unblock some of those things somehow. So let me find a different way into these posts. We got final trick on WordPress. They have WordPress hosting. Final trick, 3 days ago, there was a blog post. Thoughtful rebuffery. My day yesterday, it was a day, going into Friday without an appointment at the very special specialist meant the end of another week without any it's got blocked by one of these pop-ups. Okay, there we go. without any answers or hope for treatment in sight. I knew that if that's how the day played out, my spirits would be down. What I did not know was that I'd be in the office by myself, fielding a panoply of lengthy calls from needy parents with strange needs, that I'd get the two pieces of software we ordered over a month ago that apparently needed to be installed right that minute for billing reasons, and that I'd be juggling truly irksome emails and calls from two big corporate sellers who are trying to tell our institution that their heavily marketed but massively subpar products are really okay, just fine, and fully compliant with the federal and state laws my office is responsible for adhering to. Ah, and faculty. Can't forget the faculty in all this. They're sprinkled throughout the scene like little mischief-making gremlins, screwing this or that up royally, and then copying a hell of a lot of attitude via passive-aggressive emails. Oh, God, and the building. I forgot. How could I? That the building management decided that although the heat wave and energy crisis had passed, they'd recoup a little cash they lost in cooling bills the last few weeks by dialing back the HVAC to the point where it was 80 degrees in the halls, the restrooms, basically anywhere that didn't have a window unit going full tilt. And, to top it all off, to shut off all power to the building, they shut off all power to the building at 6 p.m. unannounced. My day ends at 6 p.m. I'd been planning on working a little late to be sure I got everything done that I hadn't done while dealing with the stuff I mentioned above. So at 5:55, I find out from a security guard that they're shutting everything down at 6. Elevator 2, I ask, slightly panicked. I don't know. You got a cell phone? He asks as I am frantically pushing the button to call the elevator down. See, I was in the lobby when I heard this. My office and all my stuff was on the 7th floor. 5 minutes to get up, get through 2 locked doors, grab all my stuff, save my work to a flash drive, and get back down or risk getting stuck in hot elevator or taking hot stairs down from 7. It was like a scene from an action movie, except in this movie, the hero is a broke-down cripple with the constitution of a snowflake. After the mad dash, I had to wait 45 minutes for my ride home in the blowing rain on a stone step where kids stand and smoke and spit. Because it was the only place to sit, because I had to sit, because I can't stand for 10 minutes, let alone 45, because I had made pickup plans in the absence of knowledge that my building would go into lockdown a half hour before I was planning to wrap up. Oh, and the doctors. Back to the doctors. Did I get an appointment? No. Moreover, I was thoroughly rebuffed, called B.I. Baths Autonomic People in the AM. Oh, yes, we have your results right here. Did you want us to do something with them? Holy cow, called primary care. Yes, we got the results. We faxed a 16-page referral last week, but can fax it to them again. Yes, please. Called Autonomic Lab back. The woman who does scheduling is gone for the weekend. Then called the turd doc and got a voicemail greeting letting me know that his scheduler is out until Tuesday. My mood has been better. It's been worse, too. But what I can sense right now is that I am having the prodrome to an amazingly, spectacularly bad mood. I'm at the top of the slope, teetering and about to go barreling down into the valley of blank, 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 and blank, blank. And you know what I really want? What would make it all better? To go out for pancakes, blueberry pancakes with bacon and home fries. Yep, that'd do it. I'm sure of it. So that was Final Trick. And one recent one a couple of weeks ago was Married to the Residency. I was recently discussing my use of fancy medical terms and how I always feel I need to justify it, but only some. For example, I have many years in a psych PhD program. I therefore feel that this gives me legitimate claim to use the term autonomic dysfunction without getting into my life story. that if I start throwing around terms like NPO and orthostatic vitals and the like, I feel as if I need to justify. Otherwise, I figure docs and the like will assume I'm just some kooky broad who is obsessed with medical crap, and whose current health complaints are to be disregarded as a form of groupie-ism. In the short version of the relevant history, I say I was raised by nurses. I worked inpatient as a secretary for years, and I was married to a residency program. My current husband stopped me last night when I was reciting this and said, "Ha, you just said you were married to a residency program, not a resident." I said, "Yeah, I was married to a residency program." If you're married to a resident, you're married to a residency program. It's not the same as saying I was married to a doctor, because a doctor could be a 50-year-old who has friends and interests outside of medicine. A resident does not. A resident has his or her residency. All their friends are residents, fellows, and later, attendings. All they do is hang out with each other. And when they get together, all they talk about is medicine. My ex even stuck around for an extra year as chief resident, so I got the full residency treatment, right down to the fun and games of making rotation schedules. Good times. Okay, that's from Final Trick. He's been blogging for years. He has been in the archives. Let's see. So she follows. Sorry, my chair's a little squeaky. Sorry about that, folks. Anaphylaxing. But you don't look sick. Let's look at that. But you don't look sick. Or chronic illness sucks. Okay, let's go to butyoudontlooksick.com. So this is on the right side of the screen, so it should actually hyperlink, and it's doing that. Things about my invisible illness you may not know. This is written by Christine. And Mizorandino. Christine Mizorandino. Okay, 30 things about my invisible illness you may not know. Many prominent bloggers were asked to participate in this simple blog post meme to help spread awareness during Invisible Awareness Week. I think it is important to participate in these things because as much as this website, my speaking and writing have brought me into the public. So I'm now waiting for the next link to open up. There it is. And there is still so much even my closest friends and family do not know. That, unfortunately, is the nature of the beast with chronic invisible illness. Okay, 30 things about my invisible illness you may not know. Number one, the illness I live with is fibromyalgia. Many people think I only have lupus, but as I usually say, lupus never comes to the party alone. Also have fibromyalgia, Sjogren's syndrome, and Raynaud's. Two, I was diagnosed with it in the year. I was diagnosed in 1992. I was a teenager, but I had symptoms since. I can remember having symptoms as young as age 12. I was always tired, unexplainable fevers, aches and pains, etc. The biggest adjustment I've had to make is learning to say no. Most people assume that I am a happy, upbeat person because of the writings and advice on my website. I am that person, but that is only one layer. I do hurt, I do cry, and I do have hard times when dealing with my illness. I am human and have a full range of emotions. see, I just popped up here to something else on Skype. Sorry about that, Skypers. Hardest part about mornings are just getting moving. I feel like the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz. I'm achy and very tired. Number 7, my favorite medical TV show is House, of course. I always loved the show from day one, even before it became the cult classic among us lupus patients. Number 8, a gadget I couldn't live without is I could never live without my microwave heating pads. The moist heat is perfect for my sore muscles, and it is quick and easy. I love gadgets of all kinds. Number 9, the hardest part about nights are getting my body to worn down and relax. It is hard to not want to try and stay up late and get more accomplished. Number 10, each day I take 17 pills and vitamins. Number 11, regarding alternative treatments, I believe that anything that helps you feel good and doesn't hurt you is okay. I believe you need to make smart, educated decisions, but in the end, the decisions are yours to make. Number 12, if I had to choose between an invisible illness or visible, I would choose to have an invisible illness. I am used to my illness being invisible. I've become good at advocating for myself, and I have learned to cherish the days where my illness isn't as obvious. Number 13, regarding work and career, when your passion becomes your purpose, there is nothing you can't do. Number 14, people would be surprised to know that I actually can be very shy. I get bad anxiety, and I even have stage fright sometimes. I know it's hard to believe since I put my life out on the internet, speak in public often, and even have stripped down to pajamas on stage in front of hundreds. But yes, before I do any of those things, I am a nervous wreck. 15, the hardest thing to accept about my new reality has been the unknown. Not knowing when my next flare might be, or not knowing if the next cold can become a hospitalization. Number 16, something I never thought I could do with my illness that I did was help my own life with lupus, let alone many others. I'm honored, humbled, and rejuvenated whenever someone likes something I wrote, claps for something I say, passes on an essay, follows me on Twitter, or even likes butyoudontlooksick.com on Facebook. The commercials about my illness, there are none about lupus. Okay, so that's like 30 questions, and there are a bunch of responses. Here's one from Jonathan Weavers. Your last post was freaking awesome. I've gone ahead and added your stuff to my Feedly account. Please keep me updated if you post anywhere else. Keep rocking, John. That's J-O-N. Okay, let's go back to chat room. See how we're doing there. Block Talk Radio chat room. Nobody's hanging out in the chat room. Folks, you're welcome. We got like 16, 18, let's see, actually 5 or 6 minutes left. So let's go floating over to Dr. Synonymous. I think I have two blogs, blog posts. Oh, one of them's missing there. If I wrote it or lost it. Oh, so that's old stuff. We can go over to Facebook and find it. Oops, I see it right there. Okay. Scroll. So I'm clicking on Facebook. Click, click, click. Let's So this is Dr. Synonymous blog post, like July 30th, this morning, called Family Medicine, a Victory for Patients. And this is written by me, Dr. Synonymous, A. Patrick Jonas, MD. And I guess I didn't say at the top my name at the top of the show. Sorry about that. I'm touched, folks, as a longtime family medicine teacher / mentor. I find special meaning in messages like the email below that I received recently. Thousands and thousands of future patients will benefit from this medical student's decision. He's a senior medical student at Wright State University, Boonshoff School of Medicine. Congratulations, patients. You won one. And I do say that intensely, sincerely. This student is going to be a really good family doctor. He really cares. So we'll see how he goes through the training and all that. If he doesn't get bludgeoned and keeps his heart going. Quote, "Hi, Dr. Jonas. I just wanted to let you know I decided to go into family practice. I came to the realization it is the best fit for me. If you had time, I was hoping we could meet up when it was convenient and talk about the possibility of you writing a letter of recommendation for me." Unquote. I love that. I felt really good. I just thought he got in touch with his mirror and made his best decision. And that's what I tell medical students. You have to be the specialist in the mirror, whoever that is. And you don't necessarily always know early on who you really are as far as specialties. There's 127 or so specialties and subspecialties, and the students don't get exposed to all of them, so they have to make a decision before they've even seen all the specialties, and that is challenging, to say the least. I'm clicking on my blog, and it came up with an ad, so some of the big ads I haven't figured out how to get rid of yet. I might be clicking so fast that I'm sort of shutting it down here. Yep, shutting it down. So let me go to a different screen. Screen of my most visited. Click back. Sort of a click-a-thon here today. To Blogger. I was real pleased today, speaking of fun in the mail, to get an announcement from sculptor Jim Muir in Sedona, Arizona, his update, summer update. And he has Colonel Travis Unity, which is a clay in progress, Athena's Prayer, and Stonewall Jackson, which is in progress. So we have Blogger Dashboard waiting for. We got a flash, something stopped. Okay, so I overloaded the system, folks, with too many cool sites. So I'm closing some of them, and I think I have about 2 minutes left. 2 or 3 minutes left in the show. So at 90 seconds is when I get my first warning from Blog Talk Radio, which is incredible broadcast potential for everybody in America almost. And that becomes very meaningful when you have a sort of a message to give. So this last blog post that I wanted to comment of mine is called Another Vietnam Personal Anniversary. This is July 28th, Sunday. 43 years ago on July 27th, I departed for Vietnam. How the time flies. I think about Vietnam daily, and especially the 20 guys in my West Point class that died over there, which gives me a heavy heart. I have feelings of acceptance, denial, pride. I wanted to go to Vietnam because I went to West Point, and I owe it to the country. Once they declared war and we knew we were all going, flying helicopters was very satisfying. Movement, freedom, mission accomplishment, camaraderie are words that come to mind. Agent Orange comes to mind occasionally these days since I was exposed to it all over the place. When I landed on fire bases in the top fourth of South Vietnam I Corps, music comes to mind. Stand By Your Man, D-I-V-O-R-C-E by Tammy Wynette, were real popular. We used to sing those. Proud Mary, Bridge Over Troubled Water. When I flew around Vietnam, I was sometimes listening to Armed Forces Vietnam, and it was a fascinating time, but we'll talk more about that later. This is Dr. Synonymous saying we'll see you next week. Good night.